Well, thank you, Eric, and it's an honor to be invited to this symposium. Look forward to it. As Eric said, I'm going to be sharing some things with you that's not so much data, but some things if I were starting over or what I would like to see a little bit different. I'd like to recognize Tim Reinbott as my co-author there. Sanborn Field is now in 125th, and in fact, when I get back and plant some wheat, it'll really be the start of the 126th consecutive year of establishment. And let me say that some of the things I'm going to share with you come from the fact that just I'm an old man, and so it may not agree with everything my co-author would say here, but I want to share with you a glimpse of what the original objectives of the field were, some fundamentals that I would like to consider today if I were starting over a new long-term study, some of the weaknesses of what we have or don't have in our data or record base, and hopefully provide some food for thought for those of you that are doing or considering long-term studies. Sanborn Field, I always ask students when I take them on a field trip, why do we have a field in the middle of campus? And that's because that 4.5 acres was out in the country before it was established, or while it was established, and campus grew around that. It was established in the fall of 1888 with the seeding of winter wheat by Dean Sanborn, and it was to demonstrate the benefits of crop rotations and manure applications for crop production. Now then, what initiated that? And as we go back in some of the records and the old log books, a decrease in yields within a few years after initial cultivation of the prairie, particularly in central Missouri, as well as other locations around the state of Missouri. They were plowed, and when they were put in domesticated plants or crops, the yields were starting to decrease after 2 to 4 years. So Dean Sanborn, in that thrust, then started what was called the rotation field. The emphasis was on crop rotations and applications of manure. And if you look at the records, the emphasis was on sustainable levels of whatever from there. Likewise, I'd like to share with you why some of the crop rotations that were set up there, as well as monocultures, et cetera, were part of the treatments in the original field, and some of them still carry through today, or many of them do, is that farming was new to that part of the U.S. Animals were a major part of power for agricultural production, so forages and feedstuffs were needed for animals. There was some grain needed for discretionary monies, as well as crop rotations and barnyard manure were starting to at least have some glimpses that they had some promise from there. So if you take a look at some of the original records and some of Sanborn's objectives here, the rotation series was designed to show value of various rotations, constant tillage of crops, non-tillage crops to soil fertility and chemicals, and various crops unmanured into soil fertility, and it went on and on then from there. Now then, as we take a look at the site, there's not a lot of data that would indicate some things, and I've tried to go back through some other records there, but as Dean Sanborn wrote there, the field was an unimproved site, whatever that meant. It was, from what I can tell from some other sources since then, it was grazed, but no indications of tillage beforehand. And there was really no explanation on the selection and assignment of the specific crop sequences as well as treatments on what was called the rotation field. Now then, mixing in a little bit of what it is today to give you an idea what it is now, and we'll kind of go back and forth. The plots are about 30 meters by 9.5 meters with a border in between of 1.5 meters. The treatments are not replicated and randomized there, and that has been a problem in publishing it. But I constantly remind people it was before Fisher Statistics, and that makes a big difference there. And I can see Charlie out there. You have the same problem there. I know this is going to make some of you squirm a little bit. I consider years as my replication. then. Likewise, there was no establishment of soil spatial variability because it is somewhat sloping to the southwest there, and there were no original soil samples before initiation of the plots, at least that we know. There were some indications there might have been some stored at the University of Illinois with the Morrill plots. Jim Brown, my predecessor, went over to look, couldn't find it, so we assume if there was something there, they were probably thrown away. The soil resources of Sanborn Field happens to be a Mexico silt loam, which is a verdic eric albiquaff. It's a clay pan soil formed primarily in lust with some pettice sediments over pre-Illinois and till, and so it has some very, very unique clay pan characteristics from there. This would give you an idea of what it looks like. Again, being a verdic eric albiquaff, it does have some water challenges as far as being very wet early in the year, and then can be very dry with some of our extended dry spells in the summer. Now, that what we have done since then, in the last 20 years or so, since we do not have any pre-initiation data, we have started, I have started using then Tucker Prairie, which is essentially the same soil that's east of Sanborn Field, about 20 miles out near Kingdom City. Its soil is pretty much the same. There are some other soil series, but clay pan soils dominated primarily by Mexico. It's a native prairie that has never been cultivated with many of the same species that were in the initial plot book, but it was grazed somewhat heavily in the 1950s, but it has not been since then, and it's a conservation area now. It likewise was one of the initial starts of Han Jenny's seed-to-end ratio classic study he performed while he was at the University of Missouri. So I'm using that as my proxy, give you an idea, a little bit of Tucker Prairie and some of the species and the scenery out there, a lot of big bluestem that's dominated out there, probably not like some of the other areas that some of you come from and some of the other species, rattlesnake master, et cetera. So I've used that quite a bit over the last 20 years from there. Now then, kind of flip to the present day to give you an idea of the application of the present day that still maintains a lot of the history relative to the documents that we're trying to document soil changes, of which are very slow there, and how they relate to nutrient balance with crop, various crop sequences. We're trying to collect and store soil and plant samples as a future means to also take a look at environmental changes, because this is some of the thrust I've had the last 10 or 12 years with that. We're trying to continue to measure changes that have been uniform plots with uniform management since initiation, demonstrate various interactions, and we use it, since it's on campus, as a teaching lab for many, many things. This is a layout of the plots as they exist right now with the current cropping systems coming in. And at the top of the diagram, which would be on the east end of the field, is where primarily most of the historic plots are still there in the same general mode of treatment from there. I would note there that Dean Sanborn was not a Texas Aggie. He could count. There was a plot 8 at one time, but a new street when town built out around it came in at about 1910 or 1911. So you can see the various plot initiations. There have been some changes over time, perhaps about every 25 years, and I'm going to cover some of those. This would give you an idea of what we have in current plots now, then. And again, the monoculture corn, as well as wheat and timothy, are a throwback to the historics. Those are the same as they've always been. Of course, fescue and soybeans are a latter addition. Most of the rotations you see there Some are somewhat similar to the initial rotation. Some have been changed some, particularly those with soybeans. The corn, wheat, red clover has been a traditional one from there. The historic plots, we still mowboard plow every fall. Seabed preparation is with a traditional disc harrow. Weed management is cultivation and hand hoeing. There have been no herbicides applied to any of these plots, and that we feel like that's important to have there as we take a look at perhaps some environmental aspects down the road. And we have some samples on those plots that go back to 1915. Now that as we take a look at how Sanborn Field has evolved, we have to take a look at American agriculture, and there's been some changes, various chapters in that life there. You got to remember that when Sanborn Field was established, we had animal power, and now then we have engines. The first tractor was on the field in 1939. We now have hybrid corn as well as other types of varieties, and I'll address that. That presents a challenge now. We have the Second World War munitions and fertilizer, the nitrogen revolution, so to speak. The energy crunch that hit us in the 70s as well as earlier this century, and then environmental awareness there. Some of the key events in the life of Sanborn Field that may kind of mirror some of the changes that you see there in American agriculture, the number of manure plots or treatments have decreased. We have about half the number now that we used to. There is an increase in fertilizer applications than what we had. Of course, our hybrids are different, and again, I'll address that. Oreomycin was isolated on plot 23 in the 1940s, which was a big discovery. And then one that recently, until 1949, all the residues were removed from the field, and that was to simulate animal agriculture, where we used everything for bedding, etc. George Smith, who took over the field then in 1950, decided with the nitrogen additions we will return that. And that's been very important to understand the buildup of organic matter back from there. I would just add, of course, there's many things in the history, a brief highlight here. It started out as the rotation field. It was going to be for 4 years because there was a four-year rotation. Quite a bit was learned. Dean Sanborn got an extension. I guess that was the first extension of programs back then. He got another 4 years, and it kept going, and finally in 1924 it was named Sanborn Field. Like I said, in 39 we started using tractors, and of course oreomycin in the mid-40s. Other things, 65, it was a designated National Historic Landmark, and it was the first one that was not a building, and I still have troubles every other year when to keep the designation. There's questions there to ask, does my roof leak? And I say, yes, I want it to there. We have the oldest no-till plot in the state, plot 7, which is continuous corn. And we had a second century plan implemented by Dr. Jim Brown, who I know many of you know from there. Now, in the background for many things in the study, we do not have soil samples pre-initiation. The first real strong set of samples we have is 1915, along with 38, 62, 88. We're in the process of collecting now, where we go down essentially to a meter, with cores in four designated areas within each plot. We have had a series of soil testing studies, et cetera, and have maintained and retained the archive those. Then, changes to the original plan occurred. These are major ones in 13, 28, 40, 80, and 88. Decrease in manure plots over time. Oats and cowpeas were part of the original study but have not been in for the last 60 or 70 years, although we've brought oats in a time or two in some emergency cases. The first 50 years really emphasized wheat production. After that, corn came in from there, and soybeans were introduced in the 50s. Again, some things I'll talk about here. I want to reemphasize as I go along that treatments are not replicated here. The earliest samples were from 1915, and again, to simulate early agriculture, a lot of the residues were removed and finally were left in 1950. Just two or three shots here. Plot 23 in front of you, the most bland plot we have, which is continuous timothy, which there's not a lot of timothy there because that has had no application of anything there, and we have to reestablish that every 7 to 10 years, but that is the source of oreomycin. To give you an idea, the two corn plots left and right, left is 17, which is continuous corn. Nothing added over the years, so we just finished harvesting our 125th. The plot on the right then would be 6 tons of barnyard manure per acre per year, which ends up being about 859 pounds of poo-poo for a 14th of an acre there. The plowed plots in front left, nothing for wheat, continuous wheat, and on the right would be the one with application of, again, 6 tons of manure. Now, some of the noted findings we have over this, as we've removed residues, they did decrease soil organic matter levels, as you'll see. Decreases in yields were generally less under the rotations than monoculture. Manure, we've shown many times, is not a complete comprehensive nutrient addition. And ag lime, when it came into play in the 30s and 40s, was a great increase. Other noted findings here, we do find increases in yields were observed when we implemented corn hybrids. Quite an increase from there. Likewise, an increase in nitrogen from there. It really increased the yields. Also, one thing that really worried me, Charles, when Jim Brown retired, every other superintendent, the yields went up the first year. Luckily, I had a good climatic year, and I followed the trend. So it was just a happenstance there. We do have strong physical degradation physically of many of our properties due to erosion on some of the plots with mowboard plowing. And we have taken a look, and we're really looking at biological aspects now with earthworms, phospholipid fatty acid, and other things that I'll share here a little bit later. We have done that. Some concerns from the past with records. I said I was going to share with you some of the aspects there. There's still some notes in there. The plot was fertilized to soil test recommendation without saying what the recommendation was, nor giving any sort of numbers or what the methods were at that time, etc. from there. Sometimes, particularly with nitrogen fertilizer, we have a few other sources. They'll say, well, we get X pounds were added. They didn't say whether it was pounds of nitrogen or pounds of that carrier. So we have to do some looking into that. The other thing that has changed a lot is, believe it or not, manure has changed, because when it was first used, it was a very strong bedding. Based material, which meant it was very carbonaceous. There was not a lot of analysis done, and the records may show that horse manure or dairy manure was used because the horse stables were very close to the field originally. Now then, thanks to Jim Brown, we've done a fairly comprehensive level of analysis. We've also found we use dairy manure, primarily solid separators, so we have found a different response to manure now than that we've taken out some of the bedding there, although we may have to go back because of the solid separator being down. Other concerns I have is some of our rotations, because of non-replication, we don't have all crops growing every year in some cases, and that presents some confoundments relative to climate. The other thing I have here is, because we have monoculture, 3-year and 4-year rotations, that means we have a 12-year cycle. For the sake of good science, it would be preferable to have the same variety of corn for 12 years. Having the same variety of corn for 12 years now is, you believe in the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus there. And so we have to note that. And with other crop entities, that's becoming a problem. As I said earlier, this is a classic representation you've probably seen, but we have noted that yields or organic matter tends to go down, but it is going up now with our inputs of residues being put back in, so we're in much better shape, and I'll present some studies here that we did recently, because the big question has been is if we harvest the corn stover for biofuels, what's the net result? Well, we looked at some of these over the years going back to 1915 through 1988. We looked at some of the continuous ones, some of the rotation ones, and basically what we found is that soil organic carbon levels decreased throughout the profile, as you would expect. They did increase for some of the large inputs and good fertility inputs in 88, but they're still not back in many cases to some of the same levels that they were pre-1915. Same thing for the rotations. It probably was not quite as bad as far as the loss, and they're coming back perhaps a little faster, but we're looking at about 40 years to get back under those conditions. This gives you an idea what we see in the upper 8 inches or so. And again, the rotations are such that we didn't have quite the losses that we did under the monoculture situations. Shows through fairly well from there. Basically, what we found here that we don't know what the original carbon levels were in Sanborn Field, but we do know that there is a time lag in all of this, and that we still have not increased the subsoil carbon levels to what they were earlier. We're now doing some active carbon with our samples, where we're trying to reflect that's most responsive out there. We were part of a national project looking at spatial or temporal variability, and we're now doing some spatial on that. But what we found, we're trying to find out when's the best time to sample to get a good idea. Basically, what we found is probably in June is where we find the greatest organic carbon, active carbon levels from there. We're trying to find out what all these numbers mean there, but we do know those treatments that have the most carbon have the most active carbon, but those that have the greater fertility, manure, and other inputs have some of the greater numbers. The other thing I would point out here is we've done some work recently with some of the ARS people here taking a look at some of the SMAF index, which is an index of quality there. And I point out here, again, we're using the native prairie of Tucker Prairie. And you can see the larger the index, the healthier the soil is with the 13 parameters that are input. You'll notice the column on the left as well as the third from the left come from the native prairie. And you can see where we have manure inputs as well as some stable growth there and stable cover, we have some very more healthy, more quality than we do with lack of inputs and some of the monocultures from there. Other things I would talk about is storage of samples, archive samples, plant, animal, etc., anything we have, and meticulous notes are very important. We want to address the original objectives but have leadway to look at new things. Some climate control and proper storage. We do store things in glass bottles, etc., but we have a Sanborn Field building on the edge of campus to do that. We have quite a storage area there in that of our various samples. We store them by year as well as a plot, etc., in samples like this to keep them as best shape we can. Same thing with some ground whole grain plant samples, etc., from there, as well as control of freezing of manure samples. I would just end up with some things. I realize my time's getting short here, that I'd share with you what Dr. Clarence Woodruff, who was the director of Sanborn Field, two individuals before me talked about the changes that are produced in soils, that aside from the information gained pertaining crops, the value of plots today and in the future lies in the assessment of the slow changes brought about in the soil, the whole soil profile, which we're doing, by the crops management and treatments imposed upon them. These slow changes, minute as they are from one year to another, are not measurable except over a period of years long enough to accumulate differences great enough to access by current to assess by current techniques. We're also using our archive samples to take a look at some other things, whether it be cadmium from phosphorus fertilizers, again, some of the earthworm and microbial biomass, as well as lead out of gas over time, and we've had a lot of success with that. I would just say I'd like to thank the individuals before me, and these are just a few that I've interacted with that have made this successful, and I hope I can have carried this on and been a good steward so someone else in the future can have the delightful opportunity to become part of this. Thank you.